Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
Sometimes the safest place is the most dangerous. You're tuned in to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring psychotherapist and author Siobhan Scott.
The trial of Brian Koberger, it is set for 2025 as we begin to take a look at some of the major cases that we are going to continue to cover for you right here. It's looking like August 11th, trial commencement for Brian Koberger, expected to last all the way into November of 2025. Could be a several month ordeal. Joining me to discuss, Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author. Here's the thing with Koberger. Is it going to last that long, I'm wondering? Because they're not bringing out a lot right now or ever that really seems to paint much of a picture of where he was or that they're going to have anything to back it up with. I mean, maybe this could be like a two-month-long prosecution presentation. I'm just wondering, what are they going to come out with on the part of the defense?
Yeah, I was surprised to see that length of time. I mean, that's a lot of time, and I had the same gut reaction. What is going to go on, you know? And I think the prosecution is going to take a lot of time because there is so much evidence, and a lot of it is DNA related, and that can get very complex. And then you're going to have opposing experts on the other side. But how do you stretch it out that long with the story that he just likes to drive around in obscure places in the middle of the night with his cell phone turned off? I mean, what else is there?
Do you think the defense of Koberger, because as far as we know, there's not a lot of exonerating anything here that can put him somewhere else or can show him not doing creepy things. There's just a lot of creepy things that it shows he has done over the years. Do you think the defense is going to take more of a psychological angle on this of, look, yeah, he's kind of a creepy guy. Use what is a weakness as a defense and as a plus of like, yeah, he's kind of creepy. He's kind of weird. He thinks differently, but that doesn't make him a murderer.
That's an interesting supposition, and I can't say that it would be a bad idea to go for that, but who knows? I don't think that it's possible to paint him as a normal Boy Scout. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just, as you say, creepiness upon creepiness and weird history, and then you've just got so much evidence that puts him at the scene. It's going to be interesting.
It's an interesting thing with him because he seems to have recognized if those internet writings that we learned about so early on last year are true, where he talks about visual snow, I believe, and having difficulty feeling emotion or connection to people. I believe it was around the age of like 13, 14-ish. It's in that area. But he was aware of it. I mean, I don't think a lot of people necessarily are aware of those things when they happen. It's just kind of life continues, and this must be how it is. The fact that he had that awareness of it is striking to me because it does seem like he didn't like it. He wanted to get some help, but it seemed that, he went down the path that he did if he did these crimes, and he continued to never really improve, if you will. But he was aware. What does that tell you about his character?
He's intelligent. There's no doubt that the guy's bright. He read a lot online. He was studying material. But it also seemed to me, in looking at those writings, that he had pretty severe OCD, obsessive tendencies. And I don't think he had any insight into that. No. And so, as we know, with a lot of serial killers, they have those obsessive tendencies and they start obsessing about murder and sexual murder. And so that's not something that he revealed in his writings, as far as we know at this point. But I think that that was probably the driving force with him and his criminal behavior. And that's not something that most people choose to go tell a therapist about and get help.
Well, it's something most people won't tell anybody about, I would think, you know, where it's like you're having these thoughts. But having the thoughts and then acting out on them, obviously that's very unhealthy thoughts to begin with. If this is like what's running through your mind on a regular basis of, you know, murdering women and, you know, horrible things like that to extract your vengeance on them or for whatever, you know, misdeeds that he perceives were done to him. That being said, when there's a lot of people out there that I can imagine feel those thoughts, but they don't necessarily act on them. What tips someone to enable them from going, I'm getting these vengeful thoughts out in my mind and hopefully that satisfies whatever, to I'm getting these vengeful thoughts out in my mind, but they're actually becoming a blueprint for something I'm planning on doing.
Mm-hmm. Boy, we'd love to know the exact formula, but somehow, and it was probably even earlier in life for him, because we know that often, even before puberty, serial killers are thinking about killing people. And that's why we say they often start with harming animals, killing little animals. And so the fantasy becomes paired with sexual arousal really early in life. And so that's something, if indeed he is guilty, that's something that was already going for him way back. And while other people may have, you know, general thoughts like, gee, I wish my ex would be hit by a train, you know, just something fairly implausible.
Never thought of that. Or a bus.
Yeah, I do hear people say that in therapy. It's like, I wish my ex would get run over by a bus or a train, you know. But they're not these intricate, detailed, erotic kinds of fantasies. I do think that's pretty unusual. And why we don't have more serial killers. Fortunately, it is unusual.
There was no sexual assault in this case at all. Is this a sexual crime, though? Is there something that connects it here? I mean, obviously, the girls very much sexualized themselves online with the pictures and everything that we saw of them. They were not shy about showing off what they had. And what makes this, then, a sexual crime without there ever being any sort of assault or anything of that nature?
That's a great question, because it confuses most people. For this kind of crime, it fits the exact model of a sexual domination serial killer. And the thing to know about these guys is that the pre-planning phase is pleasurable and erotic. The action at the time of the murders is erotic, but the after the crime, that's also, they get a lot of sexual pleasure from remembering it and going over it. So it's not just about the murder. And they actually can masturbate before, masturbate after, and they may not at the time of the murder do anything sexual to the bodies, but it, in other words, the knife is, you know, a substitution for what they'd like to be doing. And they often, they realize that if they have much contact with the bodies, they're going to be leaving DNA evidence, no matter how careful they are. So I think as DNA analysis has improved over the years, you may see less physical contact with the body, but that doesn't mean that it's not erotically driven.
So trying to understand the mind of someone like this, it's not even necessary, like how healthy people would view, you know, sexual attraction, you know, emotionally connected to someone you care about, physically, their appearance. These aren't the motivating factors for someone like him when it comes to sex. It's more so, I mean, like literally, like you said, like the knife, just something that was involved in being intimately close with someone in a non-sexual way in such a horrible, horrible, you're literally stealing someone's life.
Yes.
That is the sexual pleasure that is equated back into their mind. Not it wouldn't be, you know, assaulting someone. It's literally the murder of the act. I mean,
yes, It's this sense of godlike power.
Okay.
And that sense of godlike power, I can take life, is tied up with their sense of eroticism. And that's what motivates them. So they're aroused in the months that they're plotting and planning, because they think about this obsessively for months or even years before they do it.
Yeah.
They're masturbating at home as they think about it. And then they're doing the same thing after the fact.
Are they completely not thinking about part two of getting caught? Like, the odds of you getting away with this are not super great. I mean, you could. A lot of people do. But a lot of people don't, too. Is that not running through their mind? And also, with this case, there's no history with the two or with any of the girls, as far as we know, and him or Ethan. There's nothing there. So what is going on in someone's mind like this to go, this is justified? I mean, you understand it more when it's like a crime of passion and somebody wronged you or something like that. What is ticking in someone to make him go, yeah, let me go kill all these people right now?
My guess is that, you know, because it's a fairly small community, that he had seen at least one of the girls or seen them online and did some stalking. We know he was driving by the home. He found out where they lived, and he was very likely had the fantasy about one of them in particular. And just because the other people were present, it just added to his excitement and his thrill. And I think that narcissism is one of the consistent components with these guys, a severe, very twisted, dark sort of narcissism combined with sadism. And I think they really believe that they're going to be the ones to get away with it. And, you know, even though they obviously should have some knowledge that, you know, these guys are usually caught at some point, they may think it's worth the risk because of this obsessive kind of fascination that they have.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're neck deep in a dark, twisted tale. And just as the tension peaks, bam, a commercial about some miracle diet pill breaks the spell. It's like finding a fly in your soup after the first bite. But here's the fix. True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. You get to enjoy your crime stories without the junk. Ad-free episodes, extended interviews that go beyond the surface, and early access to all the gruesome details. It's like swapping out a can of cheap beer for a glass of fine whiskey. So search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe and keep the darkness flowing uninterrupted.